prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we discuss underseen horror movies, specifically those which have fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Erica.
I'm Lance.
And before we get into this episode's movie, we wanted to share some details about our third annual Horror Gives Back Challenge.
Yes.
So we're going to be posting a list kind of like in calendar style of all the categories that we're going to have for the challenge this year. For those of you who are new to the challenge, how it works is for every horror movie that you watch in October, you would donate $1 or more per movie to charity. So kind of like those marathon things you did as a kid and, you know, you were like, somebody would donate $1 for you for every mile you ran. Not a mile. Kids can't run that far, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, they can. You could, you know, you like to watch kids die.
I mean, yeah, that would be ideal, but yeah. So we're going to have a link set up for the charity for this year, but that doesn't mean that you have to donate to that charity. You can pick a different charity if you would like. But this year we decided, you know, there's too many humans right now that need help, and it's damn near impossible to pick just one charity for that.
It is.
So I always love to help animals. So does Lance.
Yes.
I love animals more than humans. So
same.
So this year our charity of choice is going to be Best Friends Animal Society. So they help support no kill initiatives, which is really important. We hate seeing animals get euthanized. So really great cause, really excited to be raising money for this. So again, we'll be having a link to where you can donate to that. Again, if you want to donate to a different charity, that's totally fine. Mm-hmm. But what we also like to do is provide, like I mentioned, we're going to have a list of categories. And so if you're looking for some sort of inspiration for what to watch during the month of October, you can follow our list. If you've already got your own list put together, that's great. If you're following someone else's list, we know plenty of other horror movie sites do these lists as well every year. You can follow theirs. You can do a mix. You can do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah.
But just do it for charity.
Exactly.
That's all we're really looking for here.
That's the whole purpose. Yeah. I mean, my brother Cody, he's a great artist. Shout out. He did our Unsung Horrors logo.
Yeah.
He also does a draw and watch horror list every October. So you could follow his list. You can combine lists.
Yeah.
The whole idea is for charity.
Exactly. And, you know, last year we were able to raise over $1,200 for the Trevor Project, which was amazing.
Yeah, huge. It was amazing to see people donate and just follow along.
Yeah. Weren't expecting that. Super thankful to everyone that participated last year. Really looking forward to seeing more people participate this year. So with that being said, we did want to go through what some of the categories are, just as a quick explainer, because, you know, we will have a visual posted on our Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. But some of them you might be like, what does that mean? And you know what? Play it fast and loose if you want. You can interpret it however you want, but we're just going to go through them really quickly here, and then we'll jump into our movie for this episode.
Yeah, this way you can start putting your list together, because that's the most fun with doing these type of challenges, like even like Junesploitation.
Yeah.
So I'm going to read 1 through 15 real quick.
Okay.
Okay, so day 1, Amicus Productions. We usually do Hammer Horror in the past. We have, but Amicus should get more love.
Yes.
So Amicus, then we have Sequels, Horror Sequel. Then day 3, Linnea Quigley.
Love her.
Yes. Now day 4 is Italian Horror. 5, Body Horror. October 6, LGBTQ. 7th, New World Pictures.
Yes, studios, movie produced by New World.
Day 8 is Animals. Obviously, this is what we're doing this year's charity for. Yep. So pick your favorite killer animals. Day 9, Tom Savini. This could be him, actor, makeup. I think he directed a few
films. He's directed a few as well,
Yeah, of course he did Return, like the Night of the Living Dead remake. Day 10, a composer pick, which I always love, Fabio Frizzi. Mm-hmm. Mm. Mexican horror is day 11. 12, we have witches. 13's a good one, Indonesia.
Gonna have to dig deep for that one, folks.
Yes, it's gonna be a good one. we haven't done this decade in past years, but day 14 is the 60s, so 60s horror. And then 15 is a classic. Pick something off your shelf, physical media. Yeah. You can rent something. You can, you know, check it out from your local library, but something that's physical media.
Yeah. Then second half, day 16 is In Memoriam. So this is a new category for us. We did have a few people who passed away this year who are in a lot of different horror movies, John Steiner, Clue Gulager, a number of other people. So the idea with this category is pick a movie with somebody who passed away this last year.
Yeah, and it could be crew too. It could be director, composer.
Exactly.
Anything they could pull from. Yeah.
Yeah. Day 17 is birth year. So whatever year you were born, pick a horror movie from that.
It's fun.
Day 18 is based on a book. Plenty to pick from. Not just Stephen King, folks. There's a lot more out there besides that.
Dean Koontz.
Yeah, there you go. day 19, Bleeding Skull. We did this one last year. Super fun. So you can find one of their movies either from their 1990s book, their 1980s book, or a movie that was reviewed on their site, bleedingskull.com. Day 20 is Monsters. Day 21, 1980s. Day 22, one of our favorite people, Dee Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
Day 23 is Vampires. Day 24, Hail Satan. Day 25 is Universal Horror. Day 26, Christopher Lee. So those of you who've got those Eurocrypt box sets, bust them out.
Yes.
Day 27, we're getting closer to Halloween, is going to be Slasher. Day 28, Folk Horror.
Yes.
So you can either, if you've got that Folk Horror set from Severin, Tubi has a lot on there now. I think Shudder has a whole curated section for that as well. So yeah, Folk Horror for day 28. Day 29, a director we've covered on the podcast before, but he hasn't been a category yet, and that is Freddie Francis.
Yeah, and he's a cinematographer for a lot of films too that he didn't direct, so those are included as well. A lot of great ones to pick from.
Yeah. Day 30, Haunted House, and then Halloween, baby, viewer's choice, whatever your pleasure is.
That's right. It could be Sleepless in Seattle. I mean, whatever tradition you have for Halloween.
And just, you know, Lance and I always try to do first time watches for ourselves, but that doesn't mean that you guys have to do that either. So play the categories fast and easy, do rewatches, do new to you, dig deep, find some unsung horrors of yourself. But yeah, really looking forward to this year's challenge and raising some money for a great cause.
Yes. And we'll have a visual calendar and, you know, list of the categories posted shortly. So,
yes. All right. So that brings us into this week's movie. We are covering Flavia the Heretic from 1974. As of this recording, it has 833 views on Letterboxd, and it's available to watch streaming on FlixFling. Or if you have a region free player, you can get the Shameless Entertainment Blu-ray, which also has an audio commentary from Kat Ellinger and a short interview with Florinda Balkin on it. So quick summary of Flavia. In 15th century Italy, young Flavia Gattani witnesses her father kill a Muslim soldier after a battle. Soon after, he places her in a convent. Over the years, she begins to question both her place and that of a woman, both in the Catholic Church and in the world. Fueled by the words of Sister Agatha, Flavia escapes the convent to enjoy a brief stint of freedom with her Jewish friend Abraham, only to be captured and brought back to the convent and subsequently punished. When Muslims set upon Italy, Flavia joins with them, and they help her to get revenge against the convent and her father. All right, so Flavia the Heretic was directed by Gianfranco Mingozzi. He's directed about 30 films. Most of them are actually documentary films. Mm-hmm. One of the ones of his documentaries that I watched, it's really short. It's about 18 minutes long. And I did have to do the auto-translate on YouTube, which didn't help very much, but I got the idea.
Yeah.
So this one is about the tarantula cult. The name of the film is La Taranta from 1962. And it's based on this real cult where the followers of it believe that if they're bitten by a spider, they're poisoned with some kind of evil or the spider's venom. And so the only way to get rid of that curse or the evil is to dance it out. And it's really interesting to see the director incorporate that cult into this film. The tarantula cult actually comes to the convent at the beginning of the film.
Yeah. When the first time I watched, you know, this movie, Flavia the Heretic, that was amazing to me. And of course I immediately started searching, is this a real, you know, is tarantula cult a real thing?
Yeah.
And then started reading about this dancing mania where, yeah, a lot of people believed if you're bitten by a spider or even came into contact with somebody who was bitten by a spider, that you might have some sort of disease in you and you just kind of lose control, like a lot of religious people do when they speak in tongues. Like it's
speaking in tongues, like the snake handlers, like those sort of, yeah.
But it was like determined that it was pretty much just people kind of, they were using this as an excuse in a lot of ways just to deal with like the poverty of the period and all the problems and troubles that they had. And it was just a way to escape and let loose.
Yeah.
And, which, you know, it's obviously like a psychological thing that was happening, but yeah, I was amazed by it.
Like, yeah. Footloose is loosely based on the tarantula. No, I'm just kidding. I want to dance.
So this documentary from Mangazi, does it show like people of the period? Because what was it made in the 60s?
'60s, yeah.
Were people like afflicted during the 60s? Like, did they show that?
Yeah, the subtitle, it's more like you just have to watch the filming because the subtitles did not really help at all.
Yeah.
There seems to be one specific day out of the year, though, where they go somewhere and there's like a big mass ceremony related to it. But yeah, he's filming people who are still actively in this tarantula cult. It was really interesting.
And also the first time I saw it, I was like, this is like watching a fucking Fish concert. It's a bunch of like these white people having this thrashing their bodies around and uncontrollably, like no real melodic movement, just kind of losing it. I've been to Fish shows.
I believe it.
Yeah. I'm not a Fish head fan. I'm not really into the jam music so much, but it is definitely an experience.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start calling them a tarantula cult.
Like you should. So Mangazi's other credits, he did do a film called Sardinia Kidnapped from 1968 with Franco Nero and Charlotte Rampling. And this has been on my watch list forever. And I didn't get around to watching it for this because it wasn't streaming anywhere. It hasn't been released yet. So I'm going to get around to that one though. Eventually I'll use my other methods for that. He was also the second unit director on La Dolce Vita, which is probably what he's most well known for as far as, you know, any kind of directing credits go.
Right.
So I mentioned that the Shameless Blu-ray has a commentary by Kat Ellinger, and I was really hoping to get some more insight about the director's motivation behind making this film. But Kat said in the commentary, like, yeah, he didn't really talk about why he made this film. So it's really up to our own speculation. So,
right.
Which is good because then Lance and I can't really be wrong about anything we say.
Exactly. Yeah. I did. I listened to Kat's commentary. I always enjoy hers.
They're so good.
Yeah. She has a great one too, in Images in a Convent from the Nasty Habits. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can totally see, especially when she started talking a lot about Mangazi's career as, you know, a documentary filmmaker. You can see all those, it's like a historical fiction, this movie, Flavia the Heretic, and those are always fascinating. I love it. But you can see him as a documentary filmmaker, you know, while making this work of fiction. It's just fascinating to watch.
100%. The score was by Nicola Piovani. He has over 100 different film credits, including Perfume of a Lady in Black, which has a release from 88 Films, Footprints on the Moon, also starring Florinda Bulkin. We'll get into her in a minute, from 1975. And that is coming up in the Severin House of Psychotic Women box set. And if you haven't pre-ordered that yet, I definitely recommend it. All of those on there look like they're going to be bangers.
Yeah, immediate pre-order.
Piovani also did the score for Slap the Monster on Page One from 1972, which is a political sort of newspaper thriller starring John Maria Volente. And that's on Cave of Forgotten Films, if anyone's interested in that one. I enjoyed that one. It's pretty dry. It's not it's not a, you know, it's not like a Polizio Tecci or anything like that, but I did enjoy that one. Plus, you know, Valente is always easy to watch. The score for this film, though, is especially like that main, the title score. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'm reading too much into it because of a lot of the themes in the film, but like the every few beats and then that comes out. It's like that. It's almost like a feminine chant to it. I don't know if I kind of thought like there was some femininity to it.
Yeah, I could get that. I kept hearing the Back to the Future melody over and over again. And I always, I mean, it's
what,
such
Huey Lewis in the News, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I heard The Power of Love pop up like all the time or Back in Time. But yeah, no, the music in this is, because Flavia, it's an hour, 40 minutes, but it's so epic. And the music really contributes to that.
Yeah.
I hate to use the word epic, but this, I feel like it is an epic movie. It's not just the music, it's the cinematography, which we'll get into, I'm sure. And, and the performances and the script, it's just, but the music really contributes heavily.
Yeah, for sure. More recently, Piovani has done scores for Bigas Lunas's Jamón Jamón and Life is Beautiful from 1997. Screenwriters, there are six screenwriters on this, including the director Mingazi. I'm not going to get into all of them.
Yeah.
But one thing that is interesting to me is that normally when you see that many credits on a film, it turns into kind of a mess. Like there's a lot of, it can get really disjointed and like, you know, subplots can go nowhere kind of thing.
You think
and,
it's tied to a bunch of rewrites because something's not working.
Right.
Yeah.
And in this case, I mean, everything ties up so many motifs in here, so many things that are teased at the beginning and happen at the end or that repeat themselves in a different way at the end. Yeah. And it's so good in that way.
It's so well developed. I mean, it's in it. Like you just said, it's like full circle. Everything just keeps, it just kind of repeats and there's a lot of foreshadowing and so much imagery. It's a great script.
Yeah. I think there's a couple things that are a little too heavy handed where it's like, yeah, I get it. You didn't need to force that on me,
right.
But it's still great in that sense.
Yeah. And I'll point it out too, but there's some scenes that I think they're all necessary. Again, a minute for an hour 40 isn't short, but everything feels necessary in it. But there are some scenes where I'm just like, it loses me just for a second.
Yeah.
So
there's a couple, but nothing like too egregious where like, it, which can happen a lot in Italian horror movies where it's like, why is this in here?
They, looking back, they all do all the scenes, all the dialogue, they do kind of feel necessary.
Cinematography is by Alfio Contini. He also did The Night Porter, Lenzi's Oasis of Fear, AKA An Ideal Place to Kill. And a movie that we covered back in March, Damned in Venice.
Yes.
One of the greatest child kills ever, folks.
Yeah.
beautifully shot. I mean, you can see the fact that, I mean, he worked on The Night Porter, which is, you know, another beautiful film. But this one is much more pastoral. I mean, I'm so glad this has a restoration because I can only imagine what a beat up VHS or like bootleg copy looks like.
Yeah, seriously. Because this does deserve the cleanup that it has. And yeah, from the very opening shot, you realize that you're going to watch something completely atmospheric and beautiful. Like the scenes where Flavia's just in between scenes of dialogue, she's just like walking through the fields and stuff. And it's just so beautiful to watch.
Yeah.
I'd mentioned like Flavia being so epic.
Yeah.
I think it's due to the editing too. Yeah. So it's Ruggero Mastroianni. And he did, Investigation of a Citizen Above Suspicion, which is edited so well. I mean, that has a lot of moving parts to it because there's a lot of flashback scenes.
Yeah. He also did Petri's 10th Victim, which I love. That might still be on Tubi. If it is, you know, check it out. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Death in Venice, Fellini's Satyricon, like so many. And like, there's a lot of quick scenes that, you know, you expect from like a flash forward type movie, like with Flavia on the ground and flash forward as she's a young girl. And then she, you know, flashes forward to her being a woman. It's just the progression of the story. And then a lot of the callbacks it's all due to like to the editing, I feel like. And it's so well done. And the script, obviously, which we talked about. But
yeah,
the editor is amazing.
Yeah. And I'm sure we'll get more into this too, but I think what's interesting about this too is that, you know, it is not just it does get lumped in with nunsploitation,
right?
But it's like, and I think Ian actually mentioned this at the end of our last episode. He's like, yeah, it's more of like the highbrow version of that. And you've got immense talent here working behind the camera on it. No shade on, like, you know, D'Amato, Matei, I love you guys, but you've got people who are working on, you know, Petri and Visconti and Fellini films working on this film.
Again, no shade. It's just another level. Yeah. Like and in that interview with Balkan, she even points out, like, the entire cast, herself specifically, but the entire cast and crew were very pleased that it's not quite a horror movie, but it was very outrageous for its time. Mm-hmm. And it is, and it does have nunsploitation elements because of the violence and the rape and the sex and stuff, which basically she said it just takes you out of your comfort zone as a viewer and makes you think. And you don't get that with a lot of nunsploitations. You're just there to watch the rape and the sex
and the blasphemy. Yeah.
Like, that's just what nunsploitation is. So I couldn't imagine seeing this, like, in the Nasty Habit 7 release.
No, this would not fit.
Because the story of a cloistered nun is nunsploitation. It has its moments, but that one kind of stands apart from the other three. Mm-hmm. Because it's very realistic. It does seem like a historical event and very historical fiction. So I found similarities between Flavia the Heretic and The Cloistered Nun more so than any other nunsploitation movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's on another level.
So getting into the cast mentioned already, the star of this is Florinda Balkan as Flavia. She's got 40 plus film credits. When I looked at, you know, on Letterboxd, you can see like what films of theirs you've seen, like what percentage. It's a lot lower than I actually thought it was going to be. And so I need to work on that.
Same.
Obviously, I've seen her work with Fulci, Don't Torture a Duckling, Lizard in a Woman's Skin. Footprints, I already mentioned, that's coming out soon. She's in Visconti's The Damned, which has a Criterion release. Looks great. She looks great. I mean, definitely recommend that one. So I watched that for the first time for this. It's been sitting on my shelf since the Criterion came out, and I wasn't in the mood for it. I didn't give it a rating because I didn't watch it at the right time. I watched it on like a weeknight after I'd been working for like 8 or 9 hours, and I was just exhausted. And I was like, okay, well, trying to time out all the movies that I needed to watch for this episode. I was like, okay, I can watch The Damned tonight. I chose poorly. I'm just going to leave it at that. But I'm going to revisit it someday. I know it's a great movie, but it was just my brain was too tired for it.
Yeah, that's a Balkan movie I need to watch. And I mean, not just because of Florinda Balkan, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, I know it's great and I appreciate it while I was watching it, but I just didn't have the energy for all the subtext.
Yeah.
That was pretty much what it was. Another film, I think probably one of my favorite films that she's been in is, and I think you just watched this one too, Investigation of a Citizen Above Suspicion.
Yes, that was the first time I'd watched it. Amazing movie.
Yeah.
And her role in it is, so there's the interview on the Shameless Blu-ray with Balkan, and she talks about how she takes these kind of unconventional roles, mm-hmm. and everything you've seen her in, you know, including the Fulcis and Investigation of a Citizen Above Suspicion. She's always just this powerful force of a woman. And specifically in that, you know, Investigation of a Citizen Above Suspicion, she plays this woman who's, you know, just very sexually
liberated.
She's a sex positive woman who she plays kind of like she's kind of the main subject of the whole thing. She's mm-hmm. not the lead, but she is the main subject because it involves this murder. And there's a lot of flashback scenes of her just being Florinda Balkan. Like everything I've seen her in, I mean, she's such a powerhouse. She kind of, it's like a Lucia Bose type of actress.
Yeah.
Where she just kind of commands your attention every time she's on. So yeah, I wish I do, like you said, I need to watch way more of her films.
Yeah. Well, if you need to start, I have a couple that have been previous picks for either Horror Gives Back or Junesploitation. One of them was Last House on the Beach, which is the Italian Last House on the Left.
Yeah.
And then The Master Touch, which I watched just this year for Junesploitation with her and Kirk Douglas. And
oh, that's right. Like with the car chase that you're talking about. That's
right. Yeah. And she's the wife in that. And again, not necessarily a conventional role because, you know, She's not just sitting around. I mean, she does sit around and wait for her husband to get out of jail, but she's like sets an ultimatum and she's like, yeah, you got to get out of this. Otherwise we're done.
Yeah.
So another couple of great roles from her there.
Yeah.
Some other people, I mean, it's obviously the Florinda Bulkin show, but second to her is Maria Casares as Sister Agatha, as much as I love Florinda Bulkin in this, as much as I love Flavia, I think Sister Agatha is actually my favorite character in this.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree. She's because Florinda Bulkin, she has her, I mean, she has her flaws as a character. She's a very powerful character, but you know, you can nitpick what her actions are. Mm-hmm. Whereas Sister Agatha is just, you know who she is from the start. Yeah. She has this, I don't know. She has like this, like what Kat Ellinger had mentioned, she's like this mentor in many ways to Flavia, who I think she already has many of the same ideas and theology and stuff. But I don't know. You just know from the start you're going to love her. She just has a sinister smile on her face the entire time.
Oh my God, I love her so much.
Her, and I don't know if you looked into like the voice actors who do this, the dubbing. Her specifically, she sounded like, what's her name? Alita Valli from Suspiria, Miss Tanner. Like they
share. That's why it sounded familiar. Okay, thank you.
And I'm wondering, like, could this be the same voice actress? Like, I don't know. The dubbing is really great in this. It works really well, and it actually, you know, elevates a lot of the performances that are already near perfect.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. I do love Sister Agatha.
She's so good. Then getting into some of the men who are all secondary characters in this, but you know, they do obviously play important parts in this film. Claudio Casinelli is Abraham. He is her Jewish friend. He's in a lot more films that we recognize. What Have They Done to Your Daughters? Murder Rock, Lance's favorite, Kotze's Hercules.
Hell yeah.
Martino's The Great Alligator, Island of the Fishmen, Warriors of the Year 2022. So
Hands of Steel.
Yes, Hands of Steel. He's in that one as well. And I recognized him right away, even with like his long curly hair. I was like, hey, I know that guy.
Yeah.
Then there's a Greek actor, Spiros Foulkos. He plays a Duke. My note says Duke Von Rapist because he's the fucking worst.
He's terrible.
And then Anthony Higgins is in this. He doesn't have very many lines. He's a British actor. He's in Vampire Circus, which I love. And he plays her Muslim lover later on in the film. And he's just got that, you know, he's just that pretty boy.
He's a good looking guy. Yeah. I mean, he did the first time I saw him when I was watching Flavia, I was like, I recognized him. Mm-hmm. He does have a very distinct, like it's a beautiful face, a beautiful male face. But he reminded me of Brett McKenzie from Flight of the Conchords. Especially like, I don't know, maybe it's just like the facial hair and kind of like the baby face look for a bit.
Yeah.
And like you said, he doesn't have a lot of lines in it, but he acts really well in it. Like when he smiles or does like little winks and stuff.
Right. Or when he finishes too early.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I can't relate. I do want to point out though that Carla Mancini's in this too. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she was on your list, but she's in everything.
She is.
She pops up in everything. She always pops up like on my most watched actor list on Letterboxd every year. I did watch a lot of nunsploitations, although this doesn't really fall. Flavia doesn't fall into the nunsploitation canon, which we'll get into.
Not in the formulaic sense, no.
Yeah. But she's in Story of a Cloistered Nun, mm-hmm. which I watched, and Christiana Devil Nun, Bergenzelli's Devil Nun.
Yeah.
But so the fact that she just pops up in this, like, I don't even know where she is, but she's
like, oh, do you have a nun role for me? Yeah. Sure. I'm in. She's probably one of the nuns just running around.
Exactly. Yeah. There's like a call sheet like in Italy from the 70s and she's like on top for, just for nuns or for, you know, somebody at a party.
Nuns, nudity and, you know, nonsense.
Yeah.
Bring her in. All right. We're going to get into more of our thoughts right after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
So one thing that Kat brought up in her commentary, and she brought it up at the beginning of it, was that it's interesting that at the very end of the film is that there's a text of, it says, Flavia Gattani, not yet a Muslim, no longer a Christian, was punished as a runaway nun. The idea for the film came from events which occurred during the Muslim invasions of Italy, culminating in what today is remembered as the martyrdom of the 800 at Otranto, which, yes, the beginning, it does tell you this takes place in the 1400s, but it's interesting that it's put at the end of it, which I get in thinking about it, it does kind of make sense where it's like you've gone through this journey with Flavia and then at the very end, you're like, oh shit, this is, I mean, it's not a true story. It's right. Loosely based, you know, like that happens a lot, but.
Yeah, I think I respect that too, because it doesn't set up like, I mean, there are probably people who do know the history of this while watching this, mm-hmm. and they're like, oh, that's probably pulled from this event, the martyrdom of the 800. But the fact that it is like historical fiction, like I respect that it's at the end to where basically they're saying, I pulled from this event. We pulled from the story from this event, mm-hmm. but still it's a work of fiction.
Yeah.
But yeah, that.
You don't get that today. Today you get like based on yeah. true story, the Warrens. Yeah. Like it's just, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. People rely on that to just try and cause I think we've talked about this in past episodes where it's like based on true events, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, even when you know it's completely a work of fiction, I mean, you could just throw that title card around on anything and, I think it's just to expect a reaction. Like, I don't know. It diminishes a film for me. Like yeah. it doesn't work.
Yeah, for sure. So there's a lot with this film and most of it is more about themes and characters versus like things that are happening in the film. So Lance, I know this is, you know, I watched this for the first time a couple years ago, mm-hmm. loved it. What was like, I'm just curious, like, because I have my knife ready for castration if you don't love this film. So just, you know, first initial impressions and thoughts about it. I mean, we've kind of spoiled a few things going through cast and crew already, but.
Yeah, no, I mean, I loved it right away. I mean, the first time I watched it, obviously there's scenes that make you feel uncomfortable. Yeah. Like you just said, what would happen to me if I didn't like it? And, you know, there's a real horse castration scene, oh, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, films of, you know, Italian films of the 70s, you're going to expect something that's
going to make you uncomfortable.
Yeah. And in most cases, sadly, you're going to expect some sort of real animal violence. Like, mm-hmm. you know, not in a lot of movies, but when it comes to like horror or if it's like Diodato or D'Amato or, you know, nunsploitation, you're going to expect some sort of, you know, animal cruelty. Not to the extent of what's in this movie, the castration of the horse.
Yeah.
Which is real. That's yes, a real scene.
It is. And it's interesting too, like coming off the last couple of weeks of, you know, filling in some nunsploitation gaps where a very common thing that happens in nun movies is, you know, horse fucking. Like,
yeah.
not like, well, horses oh, yeah. with horses. Not, well, there's actually, take that back. There is like horse on person action in some. But I mean, to see that, I mean, oh, it's so uncomfortable for me. And it's not just for the, you know, obviously I'm sure it's probably a little more upsetting for a man or someone with a penis or scrotum to watch something like that. It just as like, but on the other side of that, there's Livia's torture where she's having oh hot oil poured over her. And then they like burn her nipple and then cut it
they
off.
They chop off the nipple. Yeah. Brutal scene. And that, I mean, the whole castration of the horse, and it's, you know, it's something that happened that still happens. Like, you
right.
know, and it's a stallion, you know, so it doesn't overpower like the other stallion. And
right. But they give them anesthetic at least when they do that, right? No?
Oh, yeah. I would think. I don't know.
Oh, my
I don't,
God.
They probably tie it off to numb it and then just sever. I don't.
All right.
I don't
know. New topic. I can't anymore.
Well, I mean, just to say yeah. that scene, again, while it's so tough to watch and it's a bit long.
yeah.
It's necessary because there's so many callbacks to that scene. You have, like you just said, Sister Livia, and then you have the Duke
right.
who meets pretty much the exact same same ending.
Like. Well, even too, and I don't know, I think it's Mother Superior at the end who, when Flavia wakes up from like the whole fever dream, and all the nuns are just dead everywhere, there's one nun laying on the ground who's been speared in her crotch. Yeah. I think that's Mother Superior. I couldn't tell from the face because it was upside down. But I mean, that's its own sort of, I mean, it's not technically the same as castration, but there's definitely like a running theme. There's a clergyman who at the very end,
he's spiked.
He gets spiked through the anus all the way up through his neck.
I mean, there's a, and that's where the nunsploitation, you know, category kind of comes to Flavia the Heretic because of those gore effects. Like Sister Livia torture scene, there's multiple beheadings too, which are a blast to see because they do have the fake severed heads.
Love fake heads.
Yeah.
They're second to fake bats for me.
But yeah, the man being placed on the spike, that's very, because he's alive and it, you know, you just go through the whole action with him and watching him die. It's very effective. And then of course there's the ending scene with Flavia, which is wow.
Yeah. First time watching that, I was like, oh, they're just going to cut her heels so she can't move.
I thought that it was just like, she's going to bleed to death or something.
Right. No.
No, it's so tough to watch and it's very quick, but just imagining what, you know, how it ends and what comes next. And you don't see that, but that's what's like, that'll stick with me till I die.
Yeah, it's rough. So, I mean, you mentioned like a lot of these elements of the violence, those are sort of common things that you would see in a more formulaic nunsploitation movie, which is why this does fall into that as well. Mm-hmm. I think another characteristic of a lot of nunsploitation films is nudity and sex. And there is nudity in this, there is sex in this, but none of it is really like sexual or interesting, or I think Kat used the word, none of it's titillating. There's the Duke raping the girl in the pig pen, which is just horrific.
It's gross. Yeah.
It's fucking disgusting. Flavia, she has sex with the leader of like the Muslim army. Mm-hmm. Army's not the right word because it's too small to be an army, but you know, call it squad. I don't know.
Squad sounds okay. Cool.
But she has sex with him twice. The first time she does, it's just like afterwards. And he was like, oh yeah, sorry. Like, you know, most women don't enjoy it first time. You know, I get it. But the second time she has sex with him again, it's almost worse because like he's done really quickly and he's just like, whatever. And she looks at him like, are you fucking kidding me? And so it's like, she doesn't get any sexual fulfillment out of this. It's like she's been cut off from this. She's been repressed from having this. Even she's been fantasizing about the guy in the very beginning, pretty much her whole life.
Right.
And then when she finally does have sex, she's like, well, this fucking sucks. Versus like what you normally see in a nunsploitation film where these women have this sexual awakening or discovery, and usually with another woman because they're in a convent.
Right.
You don't have that at all. So there is nudity. There are naked nuns running around at the end when Flavia is having this fever dream, but it's not in any way sexual.
Right. There's no sexual satisfaction for women in this movie at all. It's all just men. And that's like an underlying theme, obviously. It's them just dominating women to every extent, you know, from the convent, from building these convent walls. So the women are locked up in there, to physically just raping them in a pigsty. You know, it's just about men being terrible, terrible people.
Yep.
Terrible human beings.
You should be ashamed to be what you are, Lance.
Yeah. Bust out that knife. I'm ready. let's change this. Yeah. But yeah, when you were talking about the, when they first have sex, I guess his name, they don't say his name. It says Ahmed in the credits.
It does, but they never call him that. So I just put like Muslim.
Brett McKenzie.
Muslim lover. Yeah. He's not, he doesn't get a name.
He doesn't. No. He doesn't need one. None of the men do. But yeah, that's the halfway mark of the movie when the Muslims kind of show up and start, sense of the word, I guess, liberating Flavia. Mm-hmm. But that halfway mark, there's two of my favorite scenes. One of them we'll get to, which it might be your favorite scene too, like that fever dream thing. But when Flavia and Sister Agatha are talking, you know, on the hill, and that's when the Muslims start showing up on the shore, and they just have this awesome conversation. Sister Agatha's basically kind of, you know, showing her how to like masturbate and have like enjoy herself and how sex is power for women. That scene is one of my favorites because it's Sister Agatha in her prime, mm-hmm. just kind of showing everything. But then right after that, when she starts falling in love with this Muslim soldier, it loses me for a while, for about 20 minutes. It really slows down, like especially when they first have sex and then she wakes up in the morning and they start talking about like what you said, like it doesn't work. You know, the first time it's not enjoyable. Mm-hmm. That whole section just kind of, it's necessary, but that's the first time I felt. And again, it's like 50 minutes into the movie where I felt like, oh, this isn't working for me very much.
Yeah.
Maybe because I didn't like seeing Flavia in that situation.
I think I felt the same way, but I feel like that was a little bit of me projecting, being like, no.
Yeah.
No.
And I know it was necessary for her to become and do what she, right. what, you know, what I want her to be. But yeah, I was like, I don't like seeing you like this, Flavia. Don't even talk to him. Kill him. You know, it's just.
Before she gets to that point, though, like before she joins up, right after Sister Agatha and her talking on the hill, when the Muslims come in and arrive at the shore and they're killing everyone and all the men are running. A continuation of one of my, what you mentioned being your favorite scene mm-hmm. is her like mocking all of the men for running away. I love her. She's like, God bless the heathen. And, you know, she's making fun of them for running away.
What happened to all that masculine arrogance, just stopping the men and laughing in their face?
Yes.
So good.
I love her so much. And then so getting back to that part of the movie where we're like frustrated with Flavia, to me, it plays into one of the bigger themes about, you know, the stripping of and reclamation of identity for her. Mm-hmm. And this is at a point of that for her. I think there is this level of self-hate that she has. And so when people have that, they tend to fall into situations that may not be the best for them. It will eventually, you know, awaken them and, you know, they'll get into where they need to be. But, you know, she curses her father by saying, you know, now you will pay for bringing me into the world dominated by men. Like, she hates that she lives in this world. And so she's trying to fight against it, and we're rooting for her to do it. But ultimately we know, like, okay, this is 15th century. Like, I'm rooting for you while you're doing this, but you know, we all know how this is going to end for you, kind of thing. I think she knows that. So there's this element of self-hate, but it's also contrasted with these very progressive feminist ideals, not just from her, but also Sister Agatha, who I don't think Sister Agatha has any self-hate. Like, she's like, I know who I am and like, you know, this is what it is. But
yeah,
Flavia is conflicted. And so she has that kind of self-hate.
Right. Yeah. And Sister Agatha, like you said, too, like, we know how it's going to end up. But she, you know, makes mention of becoming the Pope and like, you know, taking over the church.
Fuck
like,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, man, it's so powerful.
I would convert to Catholicism if Sister Agatha was the fucking Pope. I'm telling you that right now.
I would, whatever religion she's running. Yeah, I'm there.
I'm in the tarantula cult if she's running that. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. I definitely wanted the tarantula cult. I got some moves.
I know you do. No.
But yeah, like I want to jump to my favorite scene.
Okay. Yeah.
It's kind of the surrealistic. It seems to be really happening. I think this is before the dream of, you know, the fever dream she has, mm-hmm. but it's like the scene of the woman climbing into this like gutted hanging cow.
Yeah.
And then they all start kind of chewing and eating on a dead woman on the table. It's just symbolism because it's not real, because like the pain starts coming to life and bleeding and stuff.
And then the next day you see the mace is like still in the painting. So, you know,
and then it just showed that guy with the mace, like scar on his face.
Right.
So it's definitely like a dream, you know, just symbolism. But it did remind me of what was my favorite scene in Spider, Moss's Spider, mm-hmm. when Vita goes to Albert's studio and he begins dressing Vita as the Virgin Mary. And then that painting kind of comes to life.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was it? Bosch's Last Judgment. Mm-hmm. Those scenes are, you know, again, the cinematography, but it's just so atmospheric and it takes Flavia to a completely another level. I've already pointed out, but you're not going to get this in any nunsploitation film.
No. Yeah.
I mean, you're going to get this in very little films where it's just like such powerful imagery and shot so well and acted.
So we kind of already talked about one of the main themes being like that stripping and reclamation of identity. Obviously, oppression is one of the other things here that is really prevalent throughout, not just of women, but within the church. I think what was interesting too was her relationship with Abraham. And when he's first introduced, he brings up the story of Lilith, which actually sort of is Flavia's path. You know, like Lilith leaves because she's like, fuck all this. And Flavia does, you know, kind of the same thing. And so there's all these little seeds being planted for her to break out of her shell and break out and do what she does.
Yeah. And Abraham literally says that Lilith was made from shit. Like, and that is what, you know, Flavia basically, due to her father, she's treated like shit from day one, you know, and thrown into a convent and being locked up. But yeah, like you said, Lilith kind of breaks free from those chains and chains in so many ways. But yeah, that scene is great because that's when you get Flavia really, you know what her beliefs are, where she's like, that's so stupid. Like, she just flat out says, that's the dumbest thing.
Yeah.
And Abraham's just kind of, you know, he's a very nice laid back male character. He's probably the only male character in this that you kind of feel for in so many ways. But at the same time, he's completely following the rules of male dominance.
Yeah.
He's part of it. Like, he's part of the whole system, which everybody at that time period really was. I mean, I'm sure there's exceptions, but at first I'm like, I really like this guy. You know, I recognize the actor. He's great. I'm glad he's here. But then like, as the movie went along, and you feel bad with what happens to him because the Muslim soldier does behead him. He chops his head off. But again, I'm like, he deserves it. I mean, everybody in this movie deserves to die except for Flavia and Sister Agatha.
And Sister Agatha. Oh man, her death is rough too.
It is, but it's so perfect because, you know, she's speared. His spirit is thrown through her and she just falls to the ground. She owns it. You know, she's very tough, but as she's on the ground, she has a smile on her face.
Yeah.
And it's just like, ah.
It's like, of course she does.
Yeah.
I love her for that.
And there is a scene too that's kind of one of my favorites. It's when Flavia first gets to the convent, they start and her and like the Muslims start kind of, you know, taking it over. Mm-hmm. And she looks up at Brett McKenzie from Flight of the Conchords. And she gives like this kind of wicked smirk. Mm-hmm. And I was all, yes, Sister Agatha's coming out of Flavia here.
Her charging in that armor and on that horse, I was like, fuck yeah, Flavia.
So good.
So good. And we kind of talked about it already when we were going through when I was talking about the script and how well put together it is and how everything just sort of circles back. Abraham's beheading. She has a complicated relationship with him. Like, they seem to be like, they almost could be lovers, but not quite. Like, it seems to be a little bit more platonic than that.
Yeah.
I think like he's the only one that she can still find any solace in. And then the fact that her Muslim lover comes in and beheads him, just like her dad decapitated that man at the very beginning, whom she, within a few seconds, was very fond of.
Right.
It's all, you know, that comes full circle. Her getting, you know, undressed and redressed for whatever role she's expected to play comes in multiple times. So really tightly constructed in such a meaningful way.
Yeah. And it's 15th century, so we kind of expect what's going to be happening. Mm-hmm. It's like nowadays, everything is just kind of rinse and repeat. Like, everything is just terrible. Like, I mean, I hate to say it, like, you know, you get these moments of small victories and, you know, like you feel like something good's going to, you know, flashes of hope, but it all goes back to the way it was. And I think this movie really shows that. And I know it's depressing. It's depressing to watch what happens to Flavia, because like you said, it's, and what happens to the people that's closest to her, you know, like Abraham, you're right. Other than Sister Agatha, he is like the best thing for her. Like, she can confide in him and he seems to kind of urge it in a way, you know, he accepts it and he allows her to talk through things. So seeing him killed by her lover and then her lover, I guess we're at the ending now where he just kind of, he leaves and leaves her to be tried as a heretic, you know, because of what she's done to her father and the convent. It's just like, things don't change. Like, even now, it's a terrible situation.
Yeah. It's hard, you know, it's hard to watch something like this in 2022.
It is,
really think about like, fuck. I mean, obviously we're much better off now than we were then, but there's still so many things that are parallel to that. You know, I'm not going to get into too much personal stuff, but it's frustrating.
Yeah. And that I was feeling that, you know, and it doesn't affect me as a man, you know, obviously as much as what's happening in Flavia and in the world today. But at the same time, I'm just like, this is so depressing to watch, but it's so powerful and such a well-done movie that it makes you think about these things, which is great. And I love it at the end where, you know, we've talked about it. Her Achilles are cut at the heel, and they grab the flesh and just yank up and skin her alive.
Yeah.
It's a brutal scene. It's quick. It doesn't show at all, but it does show the skin tearing up. And like I said, just imagining what's going to happen and how it ends, like that's just, you know, it's like the next Hellraiser movie, but she's literally like still standing in defiance at the end.
Yeah.
She is, you know, she's tied to a tree, but at the same time, she's just, it's kind of a powerful ending. Very like Joan of Arc.
So clearly we both recommend it. It's not a feel good film though, folks.
No.
I mean, if we haven't conveyed that enough already.
if you like horse castration, it might be.
Sure. Who are you? But I mean, again, just don't go into this expecting a sleazy nunsploitation film.
Way more than that. Yeah.
Yeah. You just get a lot more out of this than that. So Lance, double feature.
Okay. So I have to go with a Florinda Balkan double feature.
Ah, nice.
Because she deserves like a night of just, I want to do it. You know, she deserves programming revolving around her performances. So a lot to choose from as you went through on her filmography, but I'm going to go with one of your favorites of all time for obvious reasons. Fulci's Don't Torture a Duckling from 1972.
She's perfection in both of these movies.
She is. And that's I think most of our listeners have probably watched it. It's basically about solving a series of child killings occurring in a small remote town in Italy. But Balkan plays another unconventional role in Duckling, this time as a witch called Macchiara, who kind of practices this black magic, who believes it's her magic that's causing or contributing to the deaths of these children. Again, it's all about her performance. It's all about the power she portrays. Like when Don't Torture a Duckling starts, it's immediately her just like digging in the dirt and showing like this crazed emotion in her eyes. And then spoiler for anybody who hasn't seen it, she is beaten and killed in this brutal manner by, you know, by like the villagers and by men. And she's kind of murdered in the name of religion, kind of in the same type of way for her own beliefs.
Wait, who hasn't seen Don't Torture a Duck, folks?
Yeah, well, no, that's okay. What I'm saying. I don't feel bad that this is a spoiler because it really isn't. It's not, it's just part of the film.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
my heart just like dropped. I'm like, there's people in the world who have not seen Don't Torture a Duckling.
There are.
My God.
And no shame, but just remedy that
shame.
Right away.
Shame.
Add that to your Horror Gives Back. Italian horror, baby. Yeah, so I didn't pick really from the nunsploitation canon. Even though Duckling does take some shots at like, you know, oppression of women kind of throughout within the Catholic system. But I mainly wanted that Balkan double feature. My next pick kind of leans into the feminist messaging, which we'll get into in a minute.
Okay. Because, I was looking at I snoop on your letterbox sometimes.
Yeah. No, I totally stalk you.
And I was, okay, fair. And I was like, like some of the stuff that you watched recently, I was like, I can see like maybe what double feature Lance is going for.
Right.
Like you mentioned Joan of Arc. I know you're not picking that for next, so I'm not spoiling anything there. But I was like, I can see that.
Oh, do you know what I'm picking next now?
I have a guess.
Okay.
Which I'm...
Well, I watched a lot of nunsploitation movies.
Right.
We both kind of agreed on this. Nunsploitation is great to watch, but... Mm-hmm. And it could really pair. Flavia could pair with a lot of these nunsploitation films, but nothing really clicked for me because it's so different.
Yeah.
That's why I just focused on Balkan.
That's fair.
But if you haven't seen Duckling, it's on Tubi. It's on Arrow. There's a great Arrow release, Blu-ray release, obviously, with a great audio commentary by Troy Howarth. Interviews with Balkan, Florinda Balkan, and Lucia Fulci. So if you haven't watched it, watch it.
Please.
Watch it before Flavia the Heretic, right?
Yeah.
Just watch them both.
Just do Lance's double feature if you haven't.
What's your double feature pick?
So I did want to go with a nunsploitation double feature. And that's the hard thing, is there's so many to choose from. And Flavia fits kind of right in the middle between, let's call them like sort of the foundational ones, like Black Narcissus, Ken Russell's The Devils, The Nun from 1966, which the novel for that by Denis Diderot is really, really good too. So definitely, I recommend both the movie and the book for that one. Then on the more like exploitation side, you've got, you know, Killer Nun, The Other Hell, School of the Holy Beast, all the movies in the Nasty Habits set, Borovchek movies like Behind Convent Walls, Alucarda, Satanico Pandemonium. Like, where do you even like begin?
Yeah.
Where do you pick? So I decided ultimately, because Flavia is hard hitting, it is a little depressing, I was like, okay, I definitely need something more on the fun realm. But I did want to go with something that is not just tonally different, but also geographically. So I am going with a Japanese nunsploitation film, and it's called Nuns That Bite from 1977, directed by Yuji Makaguchi. This is about a woman who's running away from some men in the mountains, and she finds safe haven in a convent and then becomes a nun in training there. And it has most of the tropes that you'd find in more of the formulaic nunsploitation films. It's got some absurd gore in it. It's got lesbianism. The letterbox summary says there's, quote, mild cannibalism, which is funny. And really just like outright lunacy in this film. I watched it earlier this year. John put it in, programmed it in his birthday marathon. So you missed it because you didn't show up for that, Lance.
Just saying. That's kind of my MO.
This isn't streaming anywhere, so I'm being a dick about my double feature pick. Sorry, it's not readily available for anyone to stream anywhere. But with the amount of attention that, you know, Japanese films and nunsploitation films and, you know, even like Category 3 and Hong Kong films are getting more and more, I expect that this will end up getting a release.
Nice.
At some point, so put it on your watch list now, and then it'll pop up on Blu-ray in a year or two.
That's what I like to use Letterboxd for, actually, is adding things to my watch list that aren't easily found, just so I know and I have a collection of that.
Yeah.
Like if it's streaming somewhere, it usually doesn't really go in my watch list. That's how I play.
Interesting. Next episode, Lance.
Next pick.
Yeah.
Here we go. So we're heading into the fall season. Autumn is coming. And yeah, I guess in Texas, autumn is like low 90s, mid 80s. You feel it. You can feel it.
Yeah.
And rain is here. So I wanted something to put me in that, okay, here comes Halloween, here comes October mindset. And this movie does that. It's a movie called The Devonsville Terror from 1983.
Okay.
Okay. And this next sentence might turn some people off, especially you, Erica. It's written and directed by German director and actor Uli Lommel.
He did The Boogeyman, right?
He did The Boogeyman.
Okay.
He's probably most known as a director, definitely the U.S. made The Boogeyman, but he also did The Tenderness of the Wolves, which is a German horror.
Mm-hmm.
He might be best known as acting in a lot of Rainer Werner Fassbinder films.
Right. Yeah. He did Olivia. I've seen that.
Yeah.
I gave it 1.5.
Oops. So he has, there's a lot to pick from. There's a lot of movies to pick from, either him acting or especially as directing. You know, Ted V. Michaels, budget's not going to stop him from making
films. Why did you
films.
Throw that name out there? Now you...
Well, because ignore Lommel's movies like later in his career, because they are very 2001.
Yes.
Not the movie 2001, but that period.
But
yeah, his wife, Susanna Love, who starred in The Boogeyman and a lot of his other movies, she actually co-wrote with Lommel Devonsville Terror. It's basically about, it's the 17th century. These three women are accused of being witches. They're tortured and killed. Cut to 300 years later in the same town of Devonsville where those killings occurred. There are these three women that are new to the town, and this very conservative mentality of terrible men in this community, who are descendants, obviously, of the men who killed the witches hundreds of years ago. They feel very threatened by these women. And one of these women may be the reincarnation of one of the witches killed. Yes, Susanna Love's in it. She's great. She's the lead. It also stars Donald Pleasance.
And I saw that on there. Yeah.
Nothing screams "Here comes Halloween" more than Donald Pleasance, right?
Sure.
And of course, he plays like this nervous, obsessed doctor in this movie. So yeah, it's a, I think it's a lot of fun. I watched it because of, there is some sort of like feminist messaging going on. Mm-hmm. I added it to my watch list when I was doing some, some show notes for Flavia the Heretic. It could have worked as a double feature, but, I just wanted to talk about it and dive into Uli's filmography.
Okay.
It currently has 829 views on Letterboxd. It's on YouTube. Okay. It's a good quality. There's also an out-of-print Blu-ray and DVD out there from 88 Films.
Oh, okay.
I looked at the special features, and it's literally like a trailer and a seven-minute interview with Lamel. So
I'm sure you can find the interview somewhere else.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's probably not worth picking up the Blu-ray. Yeah, I'm excited to dive in.
Okay. I mean, it's on my watch list, so yeah. I mean, that's taken one thing off my watch list at the very least.
Yay! Glad I can help.
So just a reminder, folks, Horror Gives Back starts October 1st. Check our Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook for the calendar that has all the categories. We'll also have a link to the fundraiser for Best Friends. And if you're somebody who is just like, well, I don't know if I want to participate, but I definitely want to donate. Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah.
More than welcome to. Anybody can throw in any money you want.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, be on the lookout for that. Looking forward to Horror Gives Back and the Devonsville Terror.
Yes.
If you're not already, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at Unsung Horrors. And you can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Letterboxd at Hex Massacre.
I'm on Letterboxd, Twitter, and Instagram at L Scheibe.
Thanks for listening, folks. Have a good night.
Bye.
It's Death by Video.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Graham, saying welcome to our podcast full of merry movie mayhem.
Ever wonder what an Irish kung fu movie would look like?
It's called Fatal Deviation, and we covered it.
Ever wonder what a movie about 1,000 cats would look like?
It's called Night of 1,000 Cats, and we covered it.
And it stars Hugo Stiglitz. Listen to Death by Video to hear us discuss and dissect some of the weirdest, wildest, and wackiest films ever made. All this and more on Death by Video!
Woo!